VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week I'm joined by Alison Rudd, Peter Lansley, and from beautiful southwest London, where no doubt it's raining, Mr. Matt Hughes. Today we'll be focusing on England's rather underwhelming draw against Switzerland and learning a little more about the three sides promoted to the Premier League. So please join us for the last high-quality 40 minutes of football conversation you will hear until August. All right, let's start at Wembley. How about that? Okay, so the good news is that England are undefeated, and they've scored about a million more goals than the second-place team in the group, which is Montenegro. Hughesy, you want to take care of the bad news?
Well, they were pretty awful on Saturday, weren't they? And they were fortunate Montenegro couldn't beat Bulgaria. Listen, they're going to qualify, as they should, from a pretty average group. And we shouldn't get carried away by a laboured performance at the end of a long season. But Saturday's efforts do sort of raise questions about the England strength longer term. And as Ollie Kay wrote this morning, it's sort of two steps forward, two back, and we are where we were a year ago.
Why, Matt, why do you think they're going to... Why, I mean, you said sort of deadpan they're going to qualify, but they have to go away and face Montenegro in their own little backyard, which is a small stadium, which... Exactly the sort of setup that England have wobbled in before. Why do you think that's a given?
Well, I don't really buy that argument, to be honest. If you look at England's results, they've been far better away from home than they have at home over the last few years. And Capello's actually said he'd prefer all the matches be away from home because the Wembley crowd would intimidate the poor little underpaid lambs. So I don't think they'll have a problem getting a result there, and they'll probably only need to draw. Anyway, so if they can't beat Wales, Bulgaria, Montenegro, then they don't deserve to be in the top 16 in Europe.
Lansley, Joe Hart, who we thought was England's one good goalkeeper, had a rather poor game, didn't he?
Well, he's getting canned for it, isn't he? But on both the England defence. Tried to deal with free kicks absolutely abysmally, and James Milner was schoolboy error, and
schoolboy. For those who didn't see it, please tell us that what he did, okay. And whether it was part of some kind of clever master plan of deception that he engaged in.
Well, Barnetta shaped to take the free kick. There was, I think the left back was getting ready to run in, and Milner, rather than stand his ground, in only a two-man wall to cover the near post, which Joe Hart therefore thinks, right, my near post is sorted, I'll deal with the crosses or any shots that come in. Milner just abdicated his post, and Barnetta took the advantage and shot for that near post. So that was abysmal defending, and I don't think that's Joe Hart's fault. The first one, three Switzerland players against Rio Ferdinand, who was on the wrong foot. A goalkeeper would expect one of those three Switzerland players to, almost certainly get a touch on it. So I think that's Ferdinand and the back four's fault.
Does anyone buy Milner's excuse that he thought they were going to take a short free kick, so he thought he was being clever in anticipating it? Because it just looked to me like he just sort of had one of those mental blocks where he just sort of decided to move in that sort of instinctive, I don't want to get hit sort of way, as opposed to I'm being clever here sort of way.
Well, even if Ziegler was making a run, that's not Milner's job. Milner's job in a two-man wall is to guard your near post. Leave things that develop at second ball to the second ball.
You seem to be on Lansley's wavelength here, reading your ratings today, because you said that Joe Hart was embarrassed by both the goals, but he wasn't really at fault for either, because he was let down by his defenders. Do you also give Milner a pass?
Yeah, I mean, it looked awful, particularly the second one. If Hart's culpable at all, it was for the first. But I agree with Pete that Rio Ferdinand should have cleared the ball. The second one, Milner just had a sort of one of those strange brain scrambles. He looked like a guy waiting at the bus stop who remembers he's left the iron on and just wandered off, completely deserted his what he was supposed to be doing and just sort of ambled off. And Barnett took advantage. It was an excellent goal, but shambolic defending.
But isn't... Sorry, Matt. Isn't the goalkeeper supposed to follow the line of the ball when there's a free kick? And the goalkeeper isn't supposed to assume that Rio Ferdinand's going to head it clear. He should assume the ball's going to come in my region and I have to stay in line with the ball. He left his line of duty, didn't he? I thought Hart was at fault for that, but not for the Milner going AWOL one.
Well, I think he was probably unsighted as well, because Rio jumped and just didn't get there, which was indicative of a pretty sloppy performance from Ferdinand, who hasn't played for England for over a year, and it showed.
Matt, do you think was that the most disappointed you've been with England at Wembley? I mean, they haven't won there for four games now, but you sound particularly...
Yeah, you're counting friendlies there, huh?
Well,
the anti-Fabio Brigade. Nice touch there, yeah.
But you just sound more disappointed than I've heard you before.
That's probably because it's raining, Alison. But
you know he's not an England fan. Why would he care either way? Lansley, did you take any positives apart from Jack Wilshere?
Jack Wilshere was the big positive, wasn't he? And can I rave about him? Because that was the major positive. No, you want some other, except for Wilshere.
No, actually, tell me this, though. Since you're going, you'll be doing the under-21s.
Mm.
If Jack Wilshere's playing this well, how angry are you that he's not going to the tournament?
Yeah, I'm incandescent. I'm absolutely fed up with it. And I think the FA and the Premier League need to get their heads together and decide, do they actually want England to win anything? I'm told when I did my blog on this that it's a hackneyed argument, but that's because it still stands so true. Wilshere goes, never mind Carroll. Carroll's not fussed about the under-21s. Wilshere was. Wilshere liked being in the group. He liked working with Pierce. He liked the idea of winning a tournament with England, like Spain have done, like Italy have done. So he goes there. England have got a talisman. They've got someone who is just almost better than anyone else at the tournament. And I seriously think they would win it then. I think they might win it now. But now, Wilshere, I'm tired out. I've played, 57 games or something? Hello, Arsene Wenger, if you think he's so knackered, why don't you give him a rest? You've got Nazir on the bench. You've got Arshavin to bring in. You've got all that quality of midfielder to give Wilshere a rest. So I think it would have been quite easy if Arsene Wenger actually had any concern for the national game in this country, and he does earn a living here, to give Wilshere his rest throughout the season occasionally, and Wilshere could then go with the under-21s like he wanted to only 3 weeks ago and lead England to that taste of silverware that can then breed confidence and give a platform.
Matt, anybody want to defend Wenger on this?
No, I do want to defend Wenger as well.
Matt?
Yeah, I couldn't really disagree more strongly with Pete, unless he said something offensive about Yorkshire. Jack Wilshere has played 60 games. He's 19.
How many has Frank Lampard played?
Less, but he's been injured all season. That's why he's laboured.
Yeah. And he's old enough to be Wilshere's dad. Sorry, I'm butting in.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just think that in the last two competitive England games, Wilshere has been the best player. We've got to do everything we can to make sure he arrives in Poland, Ukraine next summer in the peak of fitness. Playing for 24 months isn't going to do that. It's different for Spain, who are taking Bojan and various others. They're not taking Busquets, incidentally. But they've got far more quality players than England have. England have got Wilshere and Rooney and a 30-year-old Ashley Cole, basically, who you could say were top class. We can't afford for them to get burnt out. And Wenger's not going to rest him because he pays his wages, and nor should he. He's selfish, like most people in football. So I think it's slightly disingenuous to expect his club manager to rest a guy who he's developed since the age of 11. The FA haven't developed him. Arsenal have developed him.
Alison, Hughes says Wenger is selfish, like most people in football. And I quote, do you share his realpolitik?
And also, Peter said that Wenger doesn't care about the English game. Well, it's not Wenger's fault that the English don't care about the under-21s and don't see it as a part of the bigger picture. If England took the view that a very strong under-21 side would mature together and then go on and represent the full international team and try and win tournaments with style, I'm pretty sure Wenger, who actually, when I've heard him speak about England's chances in various tournaments, has felt quite deeply about it. I think he would have said, of course, Jack Wilshere must be part of this group of players who will go on to greatness. It's not his fault that England don't know how to treat the under-21s and how they fit into the pattern of making England a decent nation, is it?
But Alison, how can England bring through the under-21s if the clubs are flogging the players to death?
Well, they're not. This is only a debate, as far as I can see, about Jack Wilshere. The Capello's argument that everyone's tired is facetious, fatuous. It's not real. It's only because Wilshere is young, and we have these Opta stats that determine that he might be a bit more fragile than he was earlier in the season. That's about your age, and it's not about playing too much. It's about being managed properly in terms of just, you know, if you're young, you're learning, and that takes it out of you. That's all that's about.
But that's about playing 60 games, isn't it? And the majority, and how many of those have been for outside Arsenal? That must be, what, 52 England Arsenal games or something. So surely that's where he's reached the red zone in his fatigue.
But we didn't know 2 years ago that Jack Wilshere was going to be the only beacon of light for England, did we? I mean, this is all with hindsight. It would now be quite nice if Jack Wilshere was a little fresher. You can't plan for that.
Far be it, and I'm a guest in this country, so far be it for me to tell y'all how to run your business. But I agree with Peter on one point, that I think it would do you guys a world of good to actually see somebody winning something in an England shirt. Because I think, you know, there is something of a winning mentality, something that's called a culture of winning. And I know there's been some limited success at youth level. But under 21, these are real players. These are players who play in the Premier League. You could have the game on television. The media could get behind it. The whole country could get behind it.
And if you actually won, it would be very good. But we don't treat it like that.
No, you don't. And I remember a few years ago when sort of Lennon and Rooney and Richards, I think back the year was in Holland, like they all pulled out. And, you know, you treat this like the redheaded stepchild, and this is what you get. But speaking of that, Hughesy, there's a big, tall striker who, according to reports and according to a friend of Peter Crouch, says that he's considering his future. He may not want to play for England because he gets called up, but then he doesn't get to play because Darren Bent, who I believe scored, what, about 20 goals more than he did this season, actually started as England centre forward. What's your take?
Well, he's not happy because when he plays for England, he tends to score goals, but he doesn't get many opportunities to improve that record.
And does he seriously think he should be starting for England?
No, he thinks he should be on the bench.
He thinks he should be on the bench?
He's not been on the bench for the last three games and, you know, trawled around the world for the last few years, and he's kind of getting a little bit sick of it. But I don't think he will retire. He's clearly not one of Capello's favourites, but Capello will be in the job for another year maximum, so I think he's going to cling on and see what happens. Also, to be cynical for a moment, he's at a bit of a crossroads in his club career. He'll either get a new deal at Spurs or more likely be moved on. Being an England player probably adds another 10-20 grand to the weekly pay packet, so he's not going to walk away from that.
Alison, if we assume, if Euro 2012 were today, and we would assume that Rooney, if he's not suspended, would be going.
Depends on what his hair looks like, really, doesn't it?
Exactly. But you figure Rooney, I'd figure a fit Carroll, if he's fit. And then you figure Bent, and if you play 4-3-3, you're not going to take more than four strikers. So does he? I mean, is Crouch actually being clever and being saying, like, you know what? He does. He doesn't like me, and B, when a tournament and games that matter roll around, there's enough people ahead of me or potentially ahead of me that maybe it's I don't really have a shot.
Well, he may think that, but it's. I don't see what's the purpose it serves at all if he's actually thinking of quitting. There is no upside to saying that, so I hope he didn't actually say it. He's one player I actually do sympathise with Capello over. I would find it hard to work out what to do with Crouch. He's not. He looks like a target man, but he doesn't act like a target man. And I suspect that when he's on the pitch, players think, I think we've got to cross the ball a lot more than we plan to. And he sort of unbalances whatever's happening. Even though his international record is really good, I would struggle to know what to do with him. I certainly wouldn't start him.
Let's talk about the other England player who played well. And who the usually very harsh Mr. Hughes gave a 7 to in his ratings. That's Ashley Young. Peter, he's reportedly, he's very likely to leave Villa, of course. What can you tell us about his development and the sort of peaking at the right time thing?
Okay. Well, he has developed really well. He's gone from being... I mean, do you know what? When he first came to Villa, he played off John Carew. He played in this position for his first half season and was very promising, but at that stage, too, being so lightweight, he didn't make the most of that position. So when he went back out on the left wing and the way Villa played, Olof Melberg and then latterly Richard Dunn and everyone... cut back onto the right foot, cross in, was absolutely fantastic, made loads of goals that way. But then people worked him out a bit because his left foot isn't that strong for a left winger. And so when they worked him out a bit, O'Neill planned this time year, last year, as Milner was leaving, to play him in the hole for Villa. And then that's how he's played through the season. Now, although he's still obviously very lightweight, he knows how to win a free kick very cleverly. And his reading of those little... blindside runs has really improved from a striker above him, who ahead of him has got good movement like Bend and obviously like Rooney. So his development's been great. But what he still has, as he had 3 and 4 years ago, is a total arrogance about him, which belies the fact that he's been playing for a mid-table team who is on the edge of an average England team and who isn't quite as good as he thinks he is.
When he was withering from you,
yeah.
Why do you hate Villa so much?
I don't hate Villa. It's just disappointing that they've fallen away a bit. But on Ashley Young, I'm really frustrated with him. In the under-21s 2 years ago, he was the only player who would walk through the mix zone with the headphones on when there were about 3 reporters there, and he was the one who would give us not the time of day. And because he thought he'd already cracked it, well, 4 years ago it was actually. And I just think he thinks he's cracked it. Now, I'll just finish his diatribe, Alison. Sorry. Why didn't he start? Everyone's saying he was brilliant second half, as indeed he was. Why didn't he start? It's Capello's error. Well, what was he like in the week leading up to that game? Okay, that's it.
Matt, you were there in the week leading up to the game. Tell us what he was like. And also, I really want to know, did he walk right past you in the mix zone with his large headphones on, or did he actually stop to talk to you?
To be fair, he sang like a canary on Saturday. And also, I can
at the moment, isn't he?
Maybe he's going to play for Norwich. I know what Pete's saying, but I think for once, to be fair to a footballer, he's actually showed signs of maturing in the last year or two that I've been around the England camp. He does appear to be arrogant, but I think it's the kind of superficial arrogance that actually is used to mask quite a lot of insecurity. I think the fact that Capello has finally shown a bit of faith in him has started to pay off, and he's actually been playing better for England than he has for Villa this season, which is probably because he's unsettled at Villa Park.
Oh, I don't know what all the fuss is about. He has the odd really nice game, but he's often really quiet, I think, Ashley Young. He's too quiet too often to be called a great player, don't you think? Anyone think?
Well, he's still young.
No, I don't think he's that good, but I think he's in form, and you should probably pick players in form. A man who isn't in form and did play was Walcott, who had an awful game after his characteristic bright attacking run early on and then just completely disappeared. And he's a player that just doesn't really seem to ever make any consistent improvement. He started the season very well and has faded badly. He'll be lucky to hold on to his place next season unless things change.
Now, in our debate this week, we're going to look at some of the promoted sides. In fact, all three promoted sides, for those who pay no attention whatsoever to football outside the Premier League. They are Queen's Park Rangers, Norwich, and Swansea. Let's start with QPR, because, of course, this is the team that was so talked about. They have, obviously, the wealthiest owners, given that Lakshmi Mittal could probably buy Roman Abramovich and make him serve him breakfast in bed every day if he chose to do that. It's kind of curious to me that for all this foreign money and this and that, they have an English manager, Neil Warnock, who nobody seems to like, except for you, Alison. And I have to say, he's always been...
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Very nice to me. I don't have a problem with him. But many people in the game really don't seem to like him. Well, why is he?
I have no idea why people don't like him. He's funny. He has a great accent. He's passionate still for one of the more elderly chaps. I think he pulled off a masterstroke in handling promotion at QPR. It could have all gone so horribly wrong. They started, like a steam train. It was going really well. He'd gone round the world trying to sign Terapt because he really wanted him, and he had to convince him, and he had to buy him funny tea in funny cafes, he said, to convince him. And then, so Terapt comes, and there's this real danger that it's this spoilt player that it's obviously the manager's favourite is going to unsettle a pretty decent solid team. How on earth is what's going to happen? And then halfway through the season, other teams started man marking him, and it just looked like it could all go wrong. Warnock, he makes Terapt captain, which, and everyone just went it worked. He upped his game, stopped being quite so spoiled. He understood that when he had to come off, that was the good for the team. Or if he started on the bench, that was good for the team. Somehow Warlock convinced the other players, look, it doesn't mean I don't love you, but we have to go with this guy. And he didn't. The wheels did not come off. They should have come off, and they didn't come off because he obviously is quite an insightful manager and quite good at man management. And I think they are the two most... to be have some insight into what will make a team get what you want, which is in this case promotion, and to understand how to handle a maverick, if you like, are two of the hardest things you have to do as a manager, and you pull them off. So I can't think of anything other than praise to give him, really.
Matt, Neil Warnock used to work in your neck of the woods. Can you offer us any clue about why people don't like him? And also on Terapt, can he play in the Premier League?
People don't like Warnock because he's a very abrasive personality, very aggressive, slightly myopic, and his football isn't great. And he said that, I think his style of football has actually improved as his career has gone on. He started off, made his name in the lower leagues of Scarborough, Oldham, the mighty Huddersfield. But as he's had the opportunity to work with better players, his football team has improved. Sheffield United didn't play some reasonable stuff once they got out of the Championship. And QPR played some great stuff from what I've seen this season. So it shows the danger of sort of pigeonholing managers as, you know, route one specialists.
Yet another Scottish manager in the Premier League, Lansley, although not a Glaswegian, I don't believe, and it's Paul Lambert, or Lambert, as his friends call him. I find it remarkable because obviously this is two promotions on the bounce, and he did it with a guy up front for him who was very effective, and Grant Holt, who certainly works very hard. I see very little ability in him. I mean, he was at Shrewsbury a couple years ago, which actually, if I can make a very brief interlude, I spent Thursday with former Shrewsbury star Luke Rogers, who, if you remember him, he's the guy who kind of looks like Mini-Me, and he now plays up front for the New York Red Bulls, where he's partnering Juan Agudelo, the sort of bright rising star of American football, and of course some guy named Thierry Henry. But anyway, I digress. Grant Holt, Norwich, and Lambert, Lansley.
Well, Grant Holt, that's a really interesting one. I remember seeing him for Shrewsbury, and my mate's a big Shrewsbury fan, and saying, if only we can keep hold of him, you know, get into League One and everything, we'll be fine. And I went and watched Grant Holt, and he looked as slow as Matt Hughes on a tennis court. You wouldn't have believed it, but he still scored loads of goals that season, and then got his move to Norwich. I thought, he won't crack it at this level, surely. And then he's done it again. He's 30, he's slow, and he scored 23 goals in the Championship. So he's a superb finisher, and so far has been that at every level. Of course, now the chances you get in the Premiership compared to the Championship will diminish greatly, but I'm sure he'll still score a very high proportion. As for Lambert, that's going to be really interesting. Mike O'Neill really rates him, having, you know, had him as his captain at Celtic, and thinks he has what it takes to crack it at the top level. After two successive promotions, it's going to be such a test for Norwich now. But if they can survive this season, then that really would be a great achievement, and he could be destined for big things.
By the way, Peter, I'm counting your Martin O'Neill references on today's show, and that's three. So you're one away from your quota.
Let's mention Fulham, then you can get another mention in there, Peter. Who do you think is going to manage Fulham, Peter?
Stop it. Alison, behave. Paul Lambert, right? Cosmopolitan, well-spoken. Next big thing? Or does he need to keep... Or is two consecutive promotions not enough? Now he actually needs to keep Norwich up.
If you look at the resources he's had, he's obviously a pretty special manager.
And he didn't revolutionise the team that won promotion. That's the thing. I mean, many of these guys, not all of them, are the guys who won promotion from League One to the Championship.
Well, they were, before he took over, they were fragile, and he sort of U-turned them. They were the sort of team that would take the lead and then lose it. They had that West Ham thing going on. And he got them to believe that even if you're losing, you can still win it, which is obviously quite a good attribute to have as a manager. I've interviewed him once, and he was pretty monosyllabic, and, you know, the last person anywhere to talk himself up. He's not one of those. He will probably come into the Premier League and say, this is going to be very, very hard, and underplay everything. But if that's his style, it's certainly working.
Matt, Swansea are up through via the playoffs, and it's interesting to me because we often talk about sort of the route people take into management, and a lot of times it's ex-pros who are sort of instantly handed things, and in this case, it's Brendan Rodgers, who's a guy who, as far as I know, he was at Chelsea in some kind of coaching scouting capacity, but he was way down the food chain in the Mourinho era. And then, of course, he's had several jobs, some success at Watford, perhaps less success at Reading. It was Reading, right?
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. I mean, he's a guy in Conchita Lambert who, if you'll forgive me, he will talk himself up. He's got a sort of quite, I wouldn't call it arrogance, but he's certainly got the self-belief, which I think you need to have if you've never been a player and haven't got a...
I wonder where European, he gets that from.
European Cup winner's medal to fall back on like Lambert. Well, of course, he worked with Mourinho. I think he's sick of talking about him now. But when he was at Watford and Reading, you couldn't read a piece about him without a big, big fat chunk of "I was on the phone to Jose last night." But I think he's put that behind him, and by doing a great job at Swansea, he's established himself in his own right.
Isn't it? Sorry, Bert, just to interject there. So he used to mention the fact that he worked with Mourinho, whereas Villas Boas tries to make everybody forget that he worked with Mourinho.
Yeah, well, Villas Boas is fell out. That's probably one of the main reasons, and also he's worked at a far bigger club and established himself as a genuine managerial star. Rodgers isn't at that level yet, but he's clearly got something about him. He's very bright, charismatic, hardworking, but he's going to have a job on to keep Swansea in the Premier League, and he's going to also have a job on getting good players to move to Wales, I'd have thought.
Peter, you live closer to Wales than I do. Is it such a horrible place to live, as the man from Huddersfield describes it?
I don't know. I've only been on holiday there a few times. Persuading people to go there, geography aside, I think, you know, people will think, what are Swansea's chances of staying up? If Danny Graham's move from Watford has gone through, that would be an excellent piece of business. I think there's 27 goals and he scores regularly every season. Scott Sinclair, Matt might have seen a bit more of him than I have, but he does seem to have, I don't know, I'm scared to say this, but he looks better than Theo Walcott at the moment. Maybe that's not so difficult. And he's scored an absolute shed load. And, of course, he's done his apprenticeship at Chelsea. So he's got quality. But is the depth there? I doubt it.
By the way, if there's any Swansea residents, Swansonians, is that what they're called? Who knows? I watched the movie, I watched a film, Twin Town, which was set in Swansea, of course. And remember, I was asking Chris Coleman about, you know, like, do you get a little bit offended by movies like that and annoying? And he says, no, actually, because apparently it was filmed right where he grew up. He was one of the little kids. They used to dress him up, and he used to march in those marching bands of children, like they do. In the film, and he said, no, if anything, it actually made us look better than what I remember growing up. So
it's a great Welsh accent, Gav, as well.
Sorry?
It's a great Welsh accent.
I wasn't
your
doing
impersonation.
I wasn't doing an accent. On that note, I can see at least two people here clearly hate Wales, and Lansley, who goes on holiday there, loves them.
Listen, can I just say, the point being, Wales hasn't got many international airports. That's why you're not going to get many great players there. It's a lovely place. I'm going on holiday to Cricieff this year, which is North Wales, but it's not too far away.
But you're not flying there?
No, I'm going in the car. My eco car.
Your eco.
I don't fly anywhere.
You just do. Hughes either cycles or drives a Prius. Don't you know that? How about the final quick hits of the season? Who's excited? I know I am. Hughesy, Arsenal have two previously important players in Gael Clichy and Samir Nasri who are nearing the end of their contracts. Negotiations seem to have stalled. How should Wenger play it? Should he ditch them, cash in, give them the money they want? Are they that important to the side?
He should do what he wants to do in terms of footballing reasons, and for once, forget about the money, forget about the principle. If he wants Nasri to stay, he should make an effort to give him what he wants. If he thinks he can land him a better player to come in on smaller wages, he should do that. But he shouldn't stick as rigidly to these silly rules that says he doesn't sign 30-year-olds and one-year deals and doesn't sign goalkeepers and doesn't sign players with ginger hair and this, that and the other. He should, you know, he should just take a pragmatic look at the state of his squad, the state of the transfer market, and make a decision accordingly.
I'm hearing he's going to keep Nasri and maybe send Clichy on his way, what with Gibbs and all. Mark Hughes's people say that his leaving Fulham had nothing whatsoever to do with managerial vacancies elsewhere, and it was just, quote, an unfortunate circumstance. Alison, do you believe them? And how big a loss is he really to Fulham?
Well, I think the unfortunate circumstance was qualification for the Europa League. I don't think he fancied that. Mark Hughes, from the moment he was appointed, looked slightly embarrassed, and I've said this before, to be manager of a club like Fulham, just that it wasn't quite big enough for him. So it's no surprise at all that he's gone. And is he a loss to Fulham? Probably not. Why on earth would you want a manager who wouldn't be excited about the Europa League and did have that slight superiority complex? Overall, not always, but overall, they've generally, when they've had a bit of a crisis, they've picked a good man and who's done what he's needed to do. Danny Murphy, I understand, would quite like to be involved in management. That might be the way to go.
Yeah, maybe they can bring Laurie Sanchez back too, one of those good men
overall,
that you were mentioning.
I said overall.
It seems that every out-of-work manager, bar Martin O'Neill, is being linked to the Aston Villa job. Peter, who should they appoint, and who do you think they will appoint? And are they the same person?
I think they should certainly sound out any possibility of David Moyes. That rumour was doing the rounds last month that he had hit a ceiling at Everton and might be interested in moving, albeit sideways, to Villa. Fantastic manager, would suit Villa's stature at the moment. But after the compensation Villa have had to pay out to Houllier and O'Neill over the last couple of weeks, I don't think they'd want to pay any more. I think Martin Jol or Steve McLaren would be a good fit, but I think Martin Jol might prefer Fulham, ironically. I think Steve McLaren would be a good fit. Ancelotti put the word out, unless Matt can tell me otherwise, that he doesn't want the Villa job. And Rijkaard, I think, just wanted to get his name back in the running of things. Rafa Benitez, the name won't go away, but I think Jol or McLaren would be better.
Did he answer the part where he talked about who they should appoint? It was Moyes, right, Peter?
Yeah, if they could get Moyes, go for him, yeah. Right.
And that's because I expressly told you not to mention Martin O'Neill again.
I tried not to.
Okay. Robbie Keane scores 2 against Macedonia, bringing his international goal tally to a staggering 51 from about 380 appearances, and surpassing Sir Bobby Charlton among players from the British Isles. Matt, does playing for a smaller nation make it easier or harder to score that many goals? And given that he scored so much at international level, with hindsight, has the Premier League treated him rather shabbily?
I don't think so. I think he's had lots of big moves and played for lots of big clubs, but hasn't really been able to sustain his performances and hasn't quite lived up to the potential we saw as a sort of a teenager at Wolves. He's one of those players, Robbie Keane. He's got a great technique. He's kind of quick, but he hasn't got a specialism, he's not really fast, he's not really big, he's not too powerful, he can drift out of the game, but I think his international record is fantastic and shows that he actually cares about playing for his country, which is more than some people on this side of the Irish Sea.
Well, but does playing for a smaller nation make it easier or harder to score that many goals? You can answer that part.
That's because I don't know. Diplomatically ignored it. I mean, you could make a case either way, I suppose. You're going to get fewer chances because you're not as good, equally less pressure, and you're the main man. So I don't know.
Succinctly put. Alison, David Bernstein, the FA boss, stood up to the FIFA Congress and endured a pummeling from various bladder sycophants as a result. Was it worth it?
Well, sometimes it's not about the battle you're in, it's about who's listening at home when you're in the battle. Obviously, there was no way it was going to matter what he said, but it was important, probably, that the FA looked like they still felt they had the high moral ground and were not scared to reiterate that point. And the almost comical nature of the way he was harangued underlined that we're just not on the same wavelength as most of the FIFA delegates. That is the thing we've got to learn to cope with. We have to either play the game or go it alone.
You know, personally, I'm not English, but I was very, very proud of Mr. Bernstein, and I think his point got across loud and clear, and hopefully the fact that, you know, some nearly 20% of the people there either voted against Blatter or abstained, I think, is meaningful. But speaking of other FIFA matters, Peter, do you agree that having the entire Congress, all 208 nations, minus those who FIFA likes to suspend from time to time, having them all vote to assign the World Cup will make it somewhat more transparent and fraud-free than simply having the 24-man executive committee do it?
Well, 208 votes at least gives us hope of open democracy. I mean, cynics might say that just expands the number of people that you can get to or who can be tactically approached. But at least it would share the privilege around. But a one-person election, that simply can't be democratic, can it? I think it's a farce, especially with the results of, you know, 2018 and 2022. So I think that would be progress to share the responsibility and the privilege of choosing where World Cups go.
To be fair, I don't think we can call it undemocratic. I mean, after all, Kim Jong-il gets a higher percentage of the vote than Blatter does.
Gab, one for you. Who is Marco Palloni? How should I pronounce it, and why should I care about him?
You pronounce it Paoloni, Alison.
Isn't that what I said?
And you asked me how to pronounce it, and I corrected
you. So I was right.
You should care, because it's a fascinating story. This guy was the goalkeeper for Cremonese in the Italian third division. He had lots of debts, some of them stemming from gambling. And so he decided that, even though he was playing goal, he decided to bet against his own team. But he was kind of worried, because his team are actually very good, and he thought that might not be enough, because the other team might never get to shoot on goal. So what he did was he went to see his orthodontist, who wrote him a prescription for this hallucinogenic drug, which is apparently used to treat extreme cases of insomnia, and he spiked his teammate's drink, to the point that two of them had to be hospitalized after the game, and one of them had a seizure while driving and drove off the road and crashed his car and also went to hospital. And the irony in all this is that Paoloni's team still won 2-0, so he lost even more money, and then that turned him into basically a professional match fixer who went around collecting money from gamblers, pretending like he knew people to go and fix matches. And sometimes he did actually fix the matches. Other times he just kind of pretended, and then that he knew these guys and hoped that the result would go the way he did. He said it would, and then when it didn't, they started to come after him. And he is the hub of this new match fixing investigation in Italian football, of which we are also proud. Thanks for joining us. You can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis. Not as much as usual, because sadly it's summertime, which means no football until August. But maybe you can follow us on Twitter this summer. I'm on there, Ollie's on there, Allison's on there, and she's a very avid tweeter. We'll try to find some way to fill our time between now and the Community Shield, which we're also excited about. It's the last podcast of the season. It's been a pleasure. Take care.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.